On this week's 51%, we meet a 12-year-old boxing champion, then we tune into two stories about love. One takes shape as a course in college, the other under fear of deportation.
We have established a good life here in America. We built our dream after 37 years, but if I'll be deported, I'll fight for my rights.
I'm Allison Dunn, and this is 51%. A 12-year-old girl recently was named Citizen of the Month in Albany County, New York. 51%'s Dave Lucas tells us how Jada Robinson was honored by County Executive Dan McCoy at the Quail Street Boxing Gym in Albany, and how she can use her accomplishments in a male-dominated sport to encourage other girls.
Robinson is the 2017 USA National Junior Olympic champion in boxing. She is also number one in her weight class in the country and a big fan of pro boxer Floyd Mayweather and Clarissa Shields, who won an Olympic gold medal in 2012 at age 17.
That's like where mostly I get my boxing from, because I like watching them. And as I watched him, I learned a technique.
Robinson's mom, Sheba Brown, says as a small child, Jada was fascinated by pugilism.
When Jada was 5 years old, we brought Jada to the gym. And when she got here, she wanted to start that day. And they said, you can't start till tomorrow. And from the day she came, she believed that she would go pro. She said, Mom, this is what I want to do.
Sam Bunch has been a trainer at the gym for over 30 years. He's been Robinson's coach for the last three and says he knows a champion when he sees one.
Most kids reach out and they have a dream about winning something or doing something, and sometimes we don't have good a chance to succeed at things that we dream of doing. And she had an opportunity to fulfill one of her dreams, in which she won the Junior Olympics.
Robinson says she'd like to inspire her peers to join the gym.
I want to be like a good role model for a lot of girls, you know, because there's other girls who's out here on the streets and on corners and stuff. But what I can do is try to put a girls in here and be able not just to box. They don't got to box. At least like work out and like get off the street.
Robinson took up a new sport a year ago, basketball. She plays on the Albany City Rocks team. Gerald Malcolm is coach.
In basketball, if we have 12, she may be number 12. But in boxing, she's number one in the country. The players also feed off of her because they've never met anybody that was number one in the country in anything. So that gives them the drive, you know, to work even harder.
Brown says her daughter sees great advantages beyond the boxing ring.
She understands that boxing is widespread promotion. You can open up stores to sell the gear. So there's so many different avenues to do something positive other than drugs and, you know, prostitution and teenage pregnancy. And, you know, she's kind of grabbed a hold of it.
County Executive McCoy says Citizen of the Month Robinson is an inspiration to all.
It's about a 12-year-old girl that's into a predominantly male world of boxing. The show to women, when we fight about women's equality and pay and their rights in the workforce, she's breaking into a field that women usually don't. And at 12 years old, she's setting the stage on fire. So she's an inspiration to her peers here in Albany, in the Capital District, and throughout this whole nation, showing that if you do hard work, that you can do anything that you want to do.
For 51%, I'm Dave Lucas.
When a former service member needs a service dog to help with a visual, hearing, or mobility issue, the Department of Veterans Affairs helps pay for it. But that's not the case for veterans who use service dogs to help them cope with post-traumatic stress disorder. There's controversy over whether dogs can help PTSD patients and if the government should foot the bill. Paige Flager speaks with a woman who helps unite service dogs and veterans and brings us a story from Long Island, New York.
Russell Kaiser lives in a housing complex for veterans in Ronkonkoma, New York, with his service dog, Artemis.
There she is.
She looks kind of like a German Shepherd, but sleeker, and has amber-colored eyes that follow Kaiser as he walks around the room.
Sit.
Kaiser developed post-traumatic stress disorder after serving in the army in Kosovo.
At the worst, I would only sleep maybe 2 or 3 hours a night. When I did sleep, the dreams were like pure terror. It was like closing my eyes and going into a horror movie.
He was willing to try pretty much anything to make his PTSD go away, which was when he heard about a program called Paws of War. They take dogs from shelters and then train them to be service animals for veterans across the country. If Artemis senses that Kaiser is on edge, she'll get behind him and then block him from people who might startle him.
For the anxiety level, she starts biting my hand, like a nibble. That's how she does it. And the nightmare, she's waking, licks my face. And also, when she jumps up and grabs me, that's the cue to remove myself from a place because I'm being overwhelmed.
Having a service dog or even a companion animal is one tool in their recovery from their wounds of war.
That's Dory Schofield, one of the founders of Paws of War. Her involvement doesn't end when a dog goes home with a veteran.
I help them if they need yearly vaccines. We give them at-cost heartworm preventative. So anything else that I can do above and beyond to help defray costs for them will do.
Schofield says that she doesn't mind helping the veterans, but those charges are hard to stomach when looked at in context. When she trains dogs for veterans with visual, hearing, or mobility disorders, the Department of Veterans Affairs pays for veterinary care, but the VA doesn't foot the bill for veterans with service dogs for PTSD, and that just doesn't add up to Schofield.
It's just as debilitating and crippling as any other physical disability. You just don't see it. We hope that in the future, not too distant future, that the VA will provide these services.
But the VA is waiting on hard evidence that the dogs really help veterans cope with PTSD. Michael Fallon is the VA's chief veterinary medicine doctor.
I would say there are a lot of heartwarming stories that suggest that service dogs might help people with PTSD, but the scientific basis for that claim is lacking.
The VA started a study back in 2011, but had trouble with ill-trained dogs. Some of them even bit children, so that study was called off.
The VA is primarily based upon evidence-based medicine, and we certainly would want people to utilize a therapy that has proven value.
Artemisin.
For Russell Kaiser, Artemis has already proven that.
How it works, I don't know. I don't care. I don't try to figure it out. You know, like, I know antibiotics work, too. I don't need to go through the chemical breakdown of it, you know? Like, it just works.
A new study is underway. The VA is now recruiting veterans to participate, but it isn't expected to be finished before 2019. So, at least until then, the government has no plans to cover veterinary care for PTSD service dogs. I'm Paige Flager in Ronkonkoma, New York.
When you've experienced a bad breakup, do you try and numb the pain? Well, a Virginia professor has made answering this question her area of expertise with a new course on love and drugs. John Last has the story.
It's a well-worn trope. A relationship ends in heartbreak, and a well-meaning friend takes their buddy to the bar to drown their tears in beer. Take this post-breakup scene from 2004's Shaun of the Dead.
You know what we should do tomorrow? Keep drinking. We'll have a Bloody Mary first thing. Have a bite of the King's Head, couple of the Little Princess. We'll stagger back in. Bang! Back at the bar for Shaun's. How's that for a slice of fried gold?
No.
Or this, from Friends, where a drunk Rachel dunks a stranger's cell phone in champagne ice.
Just waiting for the beep.
Good.
Ross! Hi, it's Rachel. I am over you. And that, my friend, is what they call closure.
Countless TV shows and movies have taught us this is the way we deal with heartbreak. But now, new research seems to be proving that point. Jessica Salvatore is an assistant professor of developmental psychology at Virginia Commonwealth University, and she says heavy post-breakup drinking isn't just the stuff of fiction.
I mean, I think that it is reflecting in part what people expect and probably to some extent what people do experience themselves.
In addition to studying substance use in the lab, Salvatore teaches a course on media portrayals of romance and substance abuse she calls Love and Drugs.
My goal in teaching this course was not so much to tell students what was right or wrong about these portrayals, but to help them really explore those ideas themselves and to know that there was a science behind them.
And that science shows it's not just movies and TV that make us reach for the bottle after a bad breakup. There's a neurochemical basis to that dependency.
You know, when we look at a picture of the person we love, this sort of lights up the same structures in the brain that are lit up when we use a substance of abuse.
But that means numbing the pain of a broken heart has its dark side.
I mean, we do know from the science that when someone goes through a breakup or a divorce, this is a risk period for the onset of, for example, heavier drinking or drug use or, you know, a depressed mood, for example.
And now they can show that the reverse is also true. Serial heartbreakers can be more prone to addiction.
One example of this line of work comes from this ongoing longitudinal study of college students that we have going on at Virginia Commonwealth University. And what we found is that individuals who report dating several partners at a time, that they tend to have behavioral patterns and personality traits that make them more prone to form an addiction themselves.
For Salvatore, this means we have to be careful when it comes to how we integrate drinking into our love lives. She says it's all too easy these days for people to slip into a pattern of dependency when it comes to getting past the social awkwardness of dating.
This is a totally new era for relationships and substance use. Oftentimes to sort of, facilitate a first meeting with someone that they've met online, you know, where do you go? You go to the bar, you get some drinks.
And when that relationship ends, it's back to the bar. So just make sure you're savoring those sober moments in between. For the Virginia Foundation for the Humanities, I'm John Last.
And now we bring you a different story concerning love, one that's occurring under fear of deportation, as Filipino schoolmates Marco was sweet on Tess but left for the Middle East to work, and Tess went to the U.S. 3 decades later, with the help of Facebook, they fell in love. And now, their idyllic lives could be upended. Paul Amardo in Los Angeles brings us the story, part of a series entitled At Risk in the Age of Trump.
Tess and Marco were high school sweethearts in the Philippines, but only one of them knew it. It was the 1970s, and this song was blaring out of car radios across Manila.
I love her since we were in high school.
He was my buddy, and he was my best friend, and I didn't even know that he got interest on me.
Tess didn't know, partly because Marco was planning to be a priest. His Catholic family and everyone in school knew it. So even though they cared for each other, Tess and Marco stayed buddy-buddy in high school, then parted ways after graduation. But when priesthood didn't work out, Marco always kept Tess in mind.
4 times I dream of her, 1989, 1992, 98, and 2002.
Then in 2012, 37 years after graduation, they finally reconnected.
I'm always looking for her on the Facebook. I type her name and it doesn't come out.
Marco searched for his high school class and then...
Ding! Voila!
Hi, remember me? I'm adding you as a friend. You're not accepting yet.
Tess was in Los Angeles, working as a caregiver or a domestic worker for the sick and elderly. Marco was in Saudi Arabia, managing a printing press for an Arabic newspaper. Though they were 8,000 miles apart, they messaged each other almost every day.
Ingat ka po dyan. I told her, take care always and bear in mind always that I love you very much.
We felt like we're in high school again. Yeah, but it was so corny. So corny because we're already old.
And then I told her, you look old. She told me, what do you expect? Sa hirap ng pinagdaanan ko because her life is so miserable. That's why.
Before coming to America, Tess was married to an abusive husband in Manila.
He's possessive. He is hitting me emotionally, physically. He's hurting me.
To make matters worse, he left his job and gambled away their savings. Tess had to take caregiver jobs overseas to support their kids and make ends meet. She was forced to work long hours. One employer refused to feed her.
I really had to eat the dog food that time.
Tess rarely saw the money she was paid for these jobs. Later, she realized she'd been a victim of labor trafficking. When she finally got out, she followed one of her daughters who had moved to Los Angeles.
I worked from job after job. I was like homeless that time, trying to establish myself alone.
Tess got a divorce and wanted to restart her life. Marco was in a similar rut. He grew tired of living so far from friends and family in Saudi Arabia. That's when he sent Tess that fateful friend request. And after months of chatting, he saved up some money to visit her in L.A.
When I saw him at the airport going out, and he was walking towards me, and I said, oh my God, this is for real? Oh, he's still cute. Boog, 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 boog.
We just meet at the middle, and then I kiss her. Only in cheek. I whisper her, I'm going to kneel and then propose with you to marry me. And then he's told me, no, not here. He's scared.
Tess had overstayed her visa. At that moment, she was worried she would get picked up by U.S. customs agents if they attracted too much attention. So Marco withheld his proposal.
When his visa is about to expire, I said to him, so what's your plan? You can go back. I said, no, I'm not going to leave you anymore with these things happening to you. We're going to live here.
Tess and Marco have been living together ever since. Tess is now a caregiver for employers that she says treat her well and give her fair pay. Marco is a maintenance worker and usually the house chef.
Excuse me.
Pork adobo is his specialty.
Wow, you can hear it.
You need to put the cover and then wait.
We talk about Trump recently, and we're thinking without immigrants in America, what's going to happen, you know? And if I get deported.
What's going to happen to me? I will not cook anymore. What's the use? I will cook and then I'm the one who will eat.
Kidding aside, Tess and Marco are at risk whether they want to admit it or not.
Open the door!
Who's this?
It's the police! Open the door!
After hearing rumors about an immigration raid targeting undocumented Filipinos, Tess and Marco attend a Know Your Rights workshop. Volunteers act out what to do if ICE comes knocking.
Basic ones. So again, let's do it again. I don't want to answer any questions.
I don't want to answer any questions.
Many in the room don't know what to do if faced with ICE agents, Marco included.
We get some ideas how to deal with the ICE. You don't have to sign anything, and you don't give them permission to search you.
After the workshop, Tess leads the group in a song. She sings, "The life of an immigrant is one long fight." Tess insists she and Marco are not afraid. But things change after they hear of an undocumented Filipino arrested by ICE and deported. This time, it's not a rumor. So now Tess and Marco are avoiding airports, trying to keep a low profile. And after I've spent months with them, they ask me to change their names for the story. There's an old saying in Tagalog, Bahala na. It means...
if certain things happen, it's gonna happen.
It's how Tess and Marco look at their situation. Fate brought them together, and fate will keep them together, here, no matter what.
We have established a good life here in America. We built our dream after 37 years, but if I'll be deported, I'll fight for my rights until the last breath. I'll fight for it.
fight.
Marco sings at a makeshift karaoke bar at a local community center. Tess takes a selfie with him.
This for you.
A souvenir photo to add to their unending Facebook timeline. Another chapter in a love story 4 decades in the making.
You can dance, every dance with
them. I'm Paula Mardo in Los Angeles.
Nothing to sing, but while we're apart, don't give your heart to anyone. And don't forget who's taking you home and in whose arms you're gonna be. So, darling, save the last dance for me.
It's time to steer away from headlines about immigration and drill down to food lines and humanity, as told by writer Dr. Jerry Burns.
My husband Barry and I did something this summer we've never done before. We crashed a party. It was a gathering of storytellers and story lovers from Long Island and New York City. We knew many of the guests, and a few are good friends. The party host, Jim, is also a friend, and we've been in festivals with him, and he and his wife spent time at our house hanging out when Barry recorded Jim's CD. So not inviting us to his annual party has become a running joke between us. Year after year, we thank him for not inviting us to his backyard story barbecue. He says he never thought we'd want to make the trip down from the Hudson Valley to come. But this year, we were going to be on Long Island on barbecue weekend. And it so happens that Elizabeth, another Long Island storyteller who was invited to the party, well, she was at our house recording her CD the day before the party and boldly invited us to crash it. Her husband concurred. I looked at Barry. I mean, crashing a party sounded awesome to my inner rebellious teenager. I live my life outside the box and do things in my own way. And yet, I'm also a firstborn, and I am afflicted with a do-things-right streak sometimes, like in social situations. I checked with another storyteller to be sure, and she agreed. Come, it'll be fine, Jim will be happy, and you can even surprise Ken for his 87th birthday. Well, that did it. We went to the party. Ken was surprised, and Jim was delighted. So it was a successful crash, and it required no exchange of insurance cards. Now, after the first set of stories were told, people lined up for food. I was starving, but was involved in some conversation, so I didn't get onto the food line until sometime later. When I finally did get there, it was as depressing as food lines always are for me. I have a lot of food restrictions. Eating the wrong food can make me sick for days on end. That's why I usually bring potluck contributions containing food I can eat. But we reshuffled our lives a bit to get to the party because it meant leaving a day earlier than planned, and we forgot to prepare a dish. We brought wine instead. So I did the usual march around the offerings table to see what I could eat, and as usual, not much. I picked through the roasted veggies for the safe ones, grabbed some carrots and celery sticks, and scooped out a ladleful of fruit salad. It was nowhere near enough food, given how hungry I was. A friend who knows about my eating struggles watched me cherry-pick the veggies and bypass most everything else. She asked if I could manage. I said, "Yeah, I'm so hungry that I'm even going to have to eat a hamburger." Another partygoer overheard us. She asked me the dreaded question, "What are your eating issues?" Instead of the full-blown saga, I gave her a very short list of foods I avoid. Dairy, tomatoes, and peppers. Foods that in one form or another grace nearly every dish on the table. Then I said, "Excuse me for a second while I grab a burger before they're all gone." I went to the plate with burgers, but I was too late. They were already gone. I came back empty-handed. "Guess I'll get more carrots and celery," I chirped. Quick aside, I don't chirp, but I always wanted to use chirp as a tagline. Now back to the food line. I reached for more carrots and celery when the lady stopped me. "Wait," she intoned. Yeah, she didn't chirp. She pointed to her plate. "I have a lot of food here." She was right. Her plate had a hot dog, a burger, chicken slathered in buttery sauce, salads, baked ziti, and a tomato pepper bean cheese melange. "There's so much I can eat at this gathering, and so little that you can. Please," she said, "take my burger." "Really?" I couldn't believe it. "You need more to eat, and I don't need this much food. There's so much else for me to choose from. Please, take it." Gratefully, hungrily, I accepted her kind offer. And as I did, tears sprang into my eyes. It was such a little thing, and yet it was so huge for me. That tiny moment, that graceful gesture of generosity loomed large, and it made me think. Little things like that happen every day. I don't know about you, but I'm so often focused on big national news where people greedily try to amass more wealth or power at the expense of others, basically doing the opposite of what that lady did, that I sometimes forget to look for the good that happens everywhere, not in the headlines, but on food lines. The nice lady who gave a burger to a party crasher reminded me how crucial it is to do little things for others. She also reminded me to keep my eye out for the tiny touches that real and regular people do for one another in real and regular life, every single day. The littlest things come from those with the biggest hearts, like one story lover on a food line at a barbecue.
Dr. Jerry Burns is a storyteller, writer, and educator living in New York's Hudson Valley. You can find her at storycrafters.com. She also is an adjunct professor in the Department of Communication at the State University of New York at New Paltz. And that's our show for this week. Thanks to Patrick Garrett for production assistance. Our executive producer is Dr. Alan Shartok. Our theme music is Glow in the Dark by Kevin Bartlett. This show is a national production of Northeast Public Radio. If you'd like to hear this show again, sign up for our podcast or visit the 51% archives on our website at wamc.org. This week's show is number 1469.